All right, welcome back to the A-List. We have Donna Laframboise with us today, independent Canadian journalist, photographer, former National Post and Toronto Star columnist, past VP of Canadian Civil Liberties Association, author of 5 books. The book we're going to be talking about today is Thank You, Truckers. It was actually a really good book. I loved it. It was emotional, but it was hard to listen to. We'll talk about it. Welcome to the show, Donna. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for inviting me. Delighted to be here.
Yeah. This will be fun. So, I mean, tell us a little bit about yourself, I guess, first, like Canadian civil liberties. Like, when did that happen? And seems like you've got some more mainstream, credentials, but you're off as a dissident, at least for a while. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
So I started out as a mainstream journalist, but as a freelancer. So okay. I did some work for the Toronto Star. I did some work for the Globe and Mail, Toronto Life, Chatelaine, all of that. And then something marvelous happened in Canadian journalism, and that's that the National Post was launched, a brand new newspaper at a time when newspapers were closing. Suddenly there was a new newspaper in Canada, and I was hired to be part of that original newsroom. And that was a really fun experience for several years. And then, the newspaper lost money and got sold, and a hundred or more of us got laid off at a certain point. And then I went and did some other things, and I sort of thought I'd left journalism behind. And then, the years passed and I started blogging. And of course, I've always been a contrarian. I'm not terribly interested in telling people something that they know already, that they've heard already. I want to tell them something different. And so I did some research into some climate issues, and of course came up with a dissident perspective. And my first book was a dissident perspective on the women's movement, where I argued that I was very grateful for the women's movement and for equality, but there was a lot of anti-male crap there that we needed to talk about and acknowledge and hopefully address. And I didn't make myself very popular, and I don't think my arguments really helped change much, but
I think they would have. I mean, this is a pretty big movement nowadays.
These days, yes. But that book was in 1996, so it was a while ago, and it was a bit like a voice in the wilderness. So
right. So it's taken a while for that to come around, yeah.
That's right. So I just, do some blogging, write some books when it seems appropriate and necessary. And I went to Ottawa when that convoy came through. I was like everyone else. I was watching it on social media and feeling very excited because it had been a depressing 2 years in Canada before that. And I went to Ottawa to be a photographer. I'm a photographer. I took my big camera, and I thought, this is a historic moment, and I'd like to record it. And I didn't intend to write a book, but here we are with a book called "Thank You, Truckers: Canada's Heroes and Those Who Help Them." And the book is really telling those stories of who were those truckers. So I tell the stories of about 20 truckers, and I also tell the stories of all sorts of people who helped them. And, the truckers were treated like rock stars by the public. And you wouldn't know that from any of the media coverage, but they really, really were. And they changed people's lives, and they gave people hope when we were all kind of, in another winter of despair. So that's how the book came about. And the civil liberties, because I was talking about men's issues as well as women's issues back in the 90s, I was invited to be part of the Canadian Civil Liberties Association. I was a feminist who was kind of sensible and was concerned about everyone's rights, not just some people's rights. So that lasted for a while, and that was very fun. And then I moved on. And right now the Canadian Civil Liberties Association has become an organization that puts pronouns in everyone's bios on the website, and is a little bit more difficult for me to identify with right now.
So when did you write about the climate, your climate book?
I think that was 2012 that came out.
So way back then.
Yeah. And because there's a dissident movement across globally, it didn't make too many waves here in Canada, but I was invited on a 4-city speaking tour in Australia, and I was invited to go speak in various places in Europe, in Norway and Poland and Germany and Scotland and in front of a committee of the UK legislature at Parliament at one point as well. So sometimes anti-narrative, counter-narrative voices globally, there's enough of us, right?
Yeah. What was the main argument there about the climate?
So I, was reading a lot about, just in mainstream media, and the climate would come up again and again and again. And I just felt that it was a very shallow analysis. And so I started doing a little bit of research on my own, and I realized there's this whole large number of dissident scientists, but who are very accomplished, who are very credible. And they had a different perspective. And I thought, the public deserved to know that. That was where I started. And then I started looking at a UN organization called the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. No one has ever heard of that organization. So, of course, I write a book about it. and the problem is that that organization writes reports for governments. And then governments all over the world point to that report. It comes out every 7 years or something. There's a new report and say, we have to do all of these, take all of these climate actions because the UN report says so. So I started looking at that UN body that no one's ever heard of that produces this report, and how does it operate and what do they say about themselves, but then how do they actually function? And I found out that virtually everything we'd been told about that UN body and how it produces its reports turned out to be false. And other journalists just had never bothered to do any fact checking.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, what's it like now? Because we were told at the end of COVID or during COVID that climate was going to come back around. It was going to be the next big thing. And, it's in some ways it's hard to believe they're still hanging on to it. I mean, because I thought maybe we had sort of won that battle after COVID, like COVID and that they're kind of going to give up. But now they're coming at us full force, even though it seems like Trump is kind of the only bulwark against that, or the main one at least. So what's it like for you to see that come back around after the convoy book and COVID? And
well, electing the prime minister that Canada has just elected, right? The net zero man is very discouraging. It's very discouraging because Mark Carney has spent the last several years trying to browbeat financial institutions into not funding any normal energies, gas, natural gas, coal. So he's been the head of an organization that was basically putting huge pressure on all the financial institutions globally not to fund any kind of traditional energy development. And now this man is our prime minister. So this is very discouraging. Net zero is not going away, not here anyway. They're putting up a good fight against it in the UK right now, and they might be making progress. Germany seems to be collapsing their economy because of all that net zero crap that they've been pursuing for so long. I think they might be starting to wake up. I think I heard that they've just reversed their stance and said, oh, maybe we do need nuclear power after all, because, of course, they shut down their perfectly functioning nuclear power stations, to fight climate change. Anyway, and of course, nuclear power is low emissions. And so if you're trying to fight climate change, that would be a good thing to do. None of these decisions make a lot of sense.
It's unbelievable. It's really, truly unbelievable. We've been speculating here. I'd love to know what you think about this, that Carney might end up. I mean, I don't think it's happening now. Already, it seems to not be happening. But we were thinking, because it's one thing to be advocating for all this greenwashing when you're part of Brookfield and you've got investments in oil and gas in other places and you're buying pipelines and all this stuff. But in Canada, you're not advocating for that. And then if you become a leader of that country, like they're in some egoistic way or egotistic way, it might be, I was thinking maybe he'll turn around. Maybe he'll actually like want to help bring back Canada and use energy and his expertise in that as the main driver of that. I mean, I know he's still sort of talking like that, but do you think there's any chance that he might all his virtue signaling in that book might just be a load of hogwash, and he's actually more of a capitalist at heart.
He's still making a lot of money off of natural gas and oil all over the world. You know, it just seems like, I mean, not even going from the altruistic or the benevolent standpoint, I mean, just like from a corruption standpoint, it would make sense for him to sort of fucking let Brookfield run wild all over Canada.
Yeah, I don't know. I hope things turn out well. But I think just yesterday he appointed his chief of staff, who is a UN guy, you know, and that's not a good sign. But let's hope that there was a lot of bluster there, and that maybe he will be very, very sane and sensible, because he's now, you know, in charge of the country and is responsible for our direction. I hope so.
Yeah, I agree. David in the chat says Mark's Carney is full of word salads with non-committal language that misleads Canada. Yeah, I agree. It's weird to see like a non-politician here as well, and in the States. You know, you got Trump down there and Carney up here. I don't know. There's something fishy going on between them two too.
Yes. Yeah, it's very interesting to watch that.
Yeah. It's just so, I mean, we're so broken. I don't know. Like we've been just really frustrated with Canada for a while. And we both think, or at least I think, it's broken beyond repair right now. Like, I think even if Carney wanted to fix it, I don't even know if it's possible to fix it. But I mean, I listened to your book. I had it in my PDF reader. When I say listen, it's just cause I was listening to, you know, a robotic voice read it to me while I was working. But I mean, it took me a few tries. I was getting all emotional. I mean, it really was. It was in a good way. Like, the stories were beautiful, but it's something about the way, I'm getting all emotional now, even just talking about it, about the way it's misperceived by everybody, right? That's what's so frustrating. Like, the amount of love and support and the people in the streets, like, asking them not to leave, like, promise you'll stay, that kind of stuff. Like, there's so much public support, yet the media really, really did a good job. They really did. I mean, I talked to friends afterwards, friends of mine that aren't even really into all this stuff. And they just from hearing the headlines and seeing the media, their perception of the convoy was altered. So I guess there was a happy emotion, but there was also a very sad emotion that we're living in this two different universes, right?
That's right. Yeah. It is like two parallel universes, and it's very, very hard to talk to people who are in that other one. So for me, I thank you for that comment that it was very emotional. Other people have said that as well. I think it strikes different people differently. But for me, one of the things is that this is a book that is full of wonderful stories of Canadians doing amazingly generous and kind things for each other. So I have actually said to people, if you're feeling a little depressed now after the election, this is a good book to heal your heart, because there are so many stories. So, you know, the one trucker from Nova Scotia who puts a couple flags on his truck, and he sets out in this vintage Mac. He's going to drive to Ottawa because it's kind of like the vintage Mac that's in the old movie Convoy. And his friends are saying, you got to take that to Ottawa. And so he goes, and he's 5 minutes from home, and he pulls into a service station, and he puts $320 worth of gasoline in this truck. And by the time he goes in to pay, someone else has paid for it and driven away. When does that happen? Someone just pays your $320 fuel bill at a service station. And this is 5 minutes from home. He hasn't even left yet. And he's being treated like this rock star. And then he gets on the road and he goes a ways down. And then he has some, I think he has some belt that, he has to repair. And he's out there in the cold. I think he's pulled into a tractor. I think a tractor dealership. And he's out there in the cold, and some guy in a suit comes out of the office with two mechanics and says, get back in your truck. We're going to take care of this for you. You know, when does that kind of stuff happen? And that's before he's even left the province, right? So he goes all the way to Ottawa. He's treated like a rock star. He gets there, and people at first are saying, you know, thank you for coming, thank you for coming, thank you for coming. And then, as you say, it switches, and then people start saying, please don't leave. Please promise me you're not going to leave. And people weeping and getting down on their knees. You know, like this was an incredible thing that happened in this country. And we don't know about it. We don't know about it because the media just totally lost their friggin' minds and became these propagandists and refused to report on what was going on.
Well, the other thing that made me realize, I after reading your book, I was like, this is why the media lost their minds, because all different people were coming together, all sorts of people, different races, cultures, languages, nationalities. I mean, everybody was, you know, coming together, truly coming together. And I almost think there's like a metaphysical or a supernatural reason why I got so upset. Like, cause nothing ever gets me that like emotional, in this kind of regard. Right. But it's that, it was that freedom, like that true, I think it was still a ground, like an organic groundswell for, like it was a grassroots thing from the ground up that was really advocating for freedom, like through peaceful means, like very simple message, very peaceful. And I think that's what gets me so tied up is like, I think these false ones don't register with me the same way. I think that like, I'm just sort of justifying it in my head. Like I'm getting upset because it's real. I mean, that's kind of the way I like to think about it. But, that's why they had to clamp down. They're like, oh my God, this is a real movement that everybody's getting on board. I mean, I remember I drove about an hour east of Calgary in the cold, and there was people of all types, like all ages out there crying and watching them go by. I mean, it was an amazing experience just watching it go by without even going to Ottawa.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, there were people who took their kids out of school and brought them to a prairie crossroads and waited there in the cold for hours because they wanted their kids to see this, because they knew that this was history being made, and they knew this was very organic and this was very grassroots. So the number of people who were touched by this convoy from one end of the country to the other was just massive. And, you know, it's one of the things when, you know, we heard during the election campaign, oh, Pierre Poilievre, he was bringing coffee to the truckers in Ottawa. He's a bad person. And it's like, what are politicians supposed to do other than talk to people, talk to protesters, especially those who've gotten in their trucks and driven thousands of miles and spent thousands of dollars on diesel fuel to get there and are now camping out in friggin' minus 30 below. Don't you think it's worth actually talking to those people? And so when someone on the radio says that about, oh, Pierre Poilievre, he brought coffee to the truckers, they really don't get how many ordinary Canadians they're insulting when they say something like that.
Yeah.
How come? Because during the, when it was all sort of happening, the support seemed to be pretty widespread. You know, it seemed like 3 out of 4 probably. I mean, in Alberta, we're out west. So Alberta, it's, you know, 9 out of 10 is sort of. So we live in this world out here where the truckers are still, you know, heroes. You'd have a hard time sort of finding anyone out here that, you know, I don't spend a lot of time with leftists in the city. But for the most part in Alberta, you know, we support the truckers, period. You know, I'd imagine Saskatchewan is pretty much the same. But at the time, I mean, you mentioned the Maritimes. At the time, it seemed like everyone was into it, all over Ontario, all over. But as it sort of digressed or degraded into this, you know, whatever it was, you know, they called us racist, they called us all this other stuff. How come it seems like the support now seems to be more centered in the West again? Why does this just always seem to further this East-West divide? Because I think that history is going to look at the trucker support as being the, and not, I'm not saying that the West was responsible for the truckers, but they started out here. They started, I think, east, west of here, even technically, but Alberta still gets blamed for all this shit. But, you know, in 50 years or 100 years, I think this is going to be looked at. It'll be like the first act of the
Western Civilization.
I think the country's basically doomed at this point. I mean, I think it's probably been doomed for, you know, 30 years and we've just been playing it out. But it seems now that I mean, I don't know if we'll get it this go around, but I don't see Western Canada sticking around for another 20 years. I wouldn't mind your thoughts on just that aspect of it, but I just sort of looked at it. Is it they've turned that into an East versus West retroactively as well, when at the time it didn't seem like that.
I think actually that's the media. I think that's the media. And one of the things that happens, if you listen to the media for 3 solid weeks saying nasty, nasty. But,
so just to interject.
Yeah.
I would have thought it was just the media too, but the votes fucking prove the other point. You know what I mean? I mean, we just keep losing these elections. I don't think that going into this election, there was sort of this clear thing. You know, there was the conservatives, maybe not at the time, but retroactively turned into the support for the trucker party. And yeah. Carney, yeah. Specifically Mark Carney, was actively rallying to freeze bank accounts or to do whatever was necessary. So, I mean, are our memories just that short? Because I would have thought it was just the media too, but if it is just the media has done a pretty good job of manipulating a bunch of Eastern Canada again.
Yes, yes. But, you know, let's remember it was 41 to 44%, right, for conservatives and liberals. It was actually pretty close, you know, so I know why you feel.
But it shouldn't have been close. If I looked at the trucker convoy, it shouldn't have been close.
No, not even that. But it was last year. There was a point when last year it was like 80-20. Like some of the polls, like Trudeau was in so much trouble that it was 80-20 and people were so sure that the conservatives would win an election. They were so sure that when we even speculated that Carney's going to swoop in and take a small percentage and then the polls would look like they're close. Like when we even speculated on that happening, it felt like it was crazy talk. Like there's no way the liberals could pull it off. It was so lopsided in 2024. So it really.
So what I can say to you is that there were amazing relationships built between Eastern Canada and Western right. Canada at the trucker level, at the people who were coming and helping out and supporting people in Ottawa. The people came from all across the country. And, you know, there's this one trucker in my book. He says, you know, the last thing I would have expected when I got in my truck in Winnipeg was that I was going to become very close to this French-speaking family in Eastern Ontario. And whenever I go there, they treat me like royalty. And this family befriended him when he was there on the streets in Ottawa, and they brought him all kinds of special stuff that he needed. And these families are close now. And then there's another chapter about this woman who is the daughter of a trucker. She's Francophone. She lives near Montreal. She came and she cooked outside 3 hot meals a day for 3 weeks for those truckers. And the truckers on her block were Western Canadian truckers from Manitoba and from Alberta. And I think there were a couple from Saskatchewan. And she has this enduring relationship with those people now. So, and you know, the guy with the vintage Mac from Nova Scotia, he tells me that if he drives that Mac into Quebec now, and he stops at a service station, they can't speak English and he can't speak French, but people are saying, what do you need? What do you want? Here, let us buy you smokes. Let us buy you coffee. But he's a celebrity still. The truckers were folk heroes, and people look at his truck and they say Ottawa. So I think that something very fundamental changed with the convoy. Unfortunately, we did not see that change in the election results, but I'm with you. You know, I'm not a political junkie. I'm not a big political person at all. But I have a friend who said, you know, the fact that it flipped from 80-20, it looked like the conservatives were going to take it, and then it flipped to something else. It's not that things changed that disturbed him so much. It's that they changed so quickly, and that's a bit strange. And I don't have an explanation for that. How could that have changed in a matter of really a few weeks, right?
Well, the obvious thing is to say they cheated, but I don't think they cheated. I mean, I don't think they cheated, because I can just go through people I personally know that live in the East or see their Facebook feeds. And I'm like, how the fuck are you falling for the Kearney thing? Right. But I'm just watching, you know, ding, ding, a couple of day are falling into this. And the guys that aren't even political are getting political enough to post about why you should vote for Kearney. So, it,
wow.
You know, like I can't, if people say they cheated, I'm like, they didn't cheat, man. I'm telling you, I watched people I know. You know, I wouldn't say that we're still, we're Facebook friends, the people I grew up with and this and that, but people that were like ready to crucify Justin Trudeau just completely turn around and be like Kearney bots. And I mean, these are real people. And I mean, to the one thing they all have in common is they all live fucking east of the Manitoba, Ontario border.
Wow. I'm sorry. Yeah, I saw that happen too, and I don't understand it. But you know, let me just say one thing that I think needs to be said. When you lock down a population for 2 years and you divide them over masks and over vaccines and over all that kind of stuff, there is trauma. There is trauma there. It's a society-wide trauma. And I don't think we've recovered from it, because I don't think we've even addressed it and acknowledged it. And, you know, so our elections happened. The last couple of elections in Canada happened during a period where you could argue that much of the population had been traumatized. So maybe that's part of the explanation. I don't know.
Yeah, it's uncanny. It's honestly I mean, unless they're just watching the news constantly, because the real concern I have with it is that they managed, because what it seems to happen from my perspective, you can tell me whether you agree or disagree, but it seems like they managed to turn the truckers and Pierre Poilievre, whatever the fuck, into this, like, you know, we're the two gender people, were
the Trump, all these sort of MAGA, it's the Canadian MAGA kind of thing.
Yeah, the Canadian MAGA sort of thing, which I don't even know that. I mean, if we would have said that during the trucker convoy, would it have still been a red flag? Was that a red? Because I mean, I don't know. It just seemed like all those things that they were trying to pin on Pierre were the same things that he pinned on the truckers. And it was like, well, I don't know. It just seemed like we had the numbers. It really seemed like it seemed like almost the Trump thing, right? Where it was like Trump in 2024, especially, where it's not close. It's a blowout. That there's a clear mandate, which Carney says he have. And, you know, he doesn't even get a majority government and he thinks he has a mandate, but Trump gets a clear mandate, you know? And that's kind of what I expected to happen here. And the fact that it hasn't, it just, it makes me kind of, not less optimistic, because I'm more optimistic about breaking this thing up. But if I wasn't, it would make me sort of less optimistic about Canada as a country than ever.
Well, the other reason is because of it's not like we were doing good. I mean, we've been broken for 10 years. Mm-hmm. It's literally
broken.
Literally broken.
Kind of broken for some people, like clearly broken.
Did everybody just forget that whole government did this for 10 years? And even, I mean, not even to get partisan about it, because I didn't trust that Pierre would be able to fix it either. Really. I mean, I just thought it's better. It would slow down the pain. It would stall the train and give us a little bit of time maybe before it collapsed. But now, it's just not even, we're not even close.
So I think, you know, Trump is a big part of the picture. That, you know, during his first term in office, the Canadian media was right in there with all that Trump derangement syndrome. So people bought it. And, you know, there's an unfortunate thread in the Canadian psyche, which is very reflexively anti-American anyway, yeah. Right? And, you know, I love America. I think America is amazing, but I'm aware that that's not necessarily the typical Canadian opinion. So I think part of what happened is that Carney, just started playing up the anti-Trump stuff. And that was already well established from his previous term. And I think that, you know, it's discouraging, because are people really that easily manipulated? I guess so. I guess so. Some people.
That's That's a really good point. I agree, because I mean, when I was backpacking around Europe in 90, I mean, we would get the Canadian flag and put it on our backpack. I mean, that was the thing you had to do so that you weren't considered American. I mean, we were like, we don't want to be considered American even back then. And with the TDS now rampant, it just makes it worse.
I feel like even back then it was propaganda. I remember that. I remember that.
No.
I feel like it's always been propaganda. You know, it's funny. Is I've started to notice around my little prairie town, American flags going up next to the Alberta flags. Like, I'm driving by the other day, I'm like, this dude put up a flagpole.
he put up a flagpole.
So I wouldn't mind thoughts on that, because I agree with you. I mean, I have great friends in Quebec. With some of my best friends are in Quebec. You know, we got a ton of listeners in Quebec. I think there, you know, I got no problem with the government's kind of fucked, and Montreal seems to be crazy. And I mean, that when it really boils down to it, at the end of the day, is we're talking about like a couple of islands in the Atlantic and Montreal and Toronto that seem to be running the country. And so you've got these stories about this, but it still doesn't seem to pan out politically. So what are your thoughts? I mean, because it's got to be kind of weird writing this book and having all these stories about these, the Quebec guys love these guys and these guys are making breakfast for the Western guys. And now, you know, here we are, and separation sentiment has never been higher probably ever for Alberta. I mean, I wasn't here during the first Trudeau, but it seems higher than possible, than I would have thought possible even 3 months ago.
Wow.
Right now. And so how does that, like, and I was pretty young during the Quebec one, so I don't know, but I mean, they got close, right? They got within 1% of pulling it off. So I don't know, like, maybe there's a questions in there somewhere. What are your thoughts on if you think that trucker convoy has led to where the West is now? Is that directly a result of just the Liberal government, or?
Oh dear. I don't know. I think the West has, I am totally sympathetic to the argument that Alberta is in an abusive relationship with the rest of Canada, that the rest of Canada is happy to take lots of tax revenue, but and then not even be respectful. Never mind grateful for that. So, I'm very sympathetic to you, to the perspective, and I'm going to be watching very closely and with great interest what happens when you folks vote on a referendum. And I think it's going to be cool. I don't know. For me, there's no direct link with the truckers. You know, I just think that a lot of Canadians found out that when they went to Ottawa, there were, as you said, Graham, there were all sorts of people from all kinds of background. And some of them were very religious, and other ones had F. Trudeau flags. And they knew that they still had common ground, and it was live and let live and be respectful to everyone, and people from different backgrounds. We have this common ground that the government is overreaching, and we have to get back to normal, and enough is enough with all this COVID BS. So that was the common ground, and it was good for everyone to realize that there were people from all across the country and from different provinces who saw, that was our worldview. That was the same worldview. But I don't necessarily see a direct link to what's happening in Alberta. But as I say, I'm very sympathetic to your arguments, and I think things have to change, or you're going to walk, and I'm not going to blame you guys if you do, because it makes sense to me. You're not getting a good you're not in a respectful relationship right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Not many people back east see that. Are you in Ontario or Quebec yourself?
I'm in Ontario. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It seems like the freezing of the bank accounts was sort of a step too far and a lot of people, you know, a lot of Canadians might have just looked at that sort of as just a nothing burger. But I mean, out here in the West, that was like, because we've got a huge population of old fucking communists, you know, people that escaped communism. When I was in the bank, because we supported the trucker convoy, and then we went and we were panicking because they were freezing bank accounts. So we ended up pulling our money out and putting it into a credit union for a little while. But when I was at the bank, there was a lineup of people pulling their money.
Oh, wow.
And then, I mean, that gives rise to Danielle Smith, of course, who's the first Western leader to come out and apologize for the policies and all that during the COVID era and all this sort of thing, who, I mean, ultimately, I don't know that she is a separatist. I honestly think they're pushing this. I think that, what did they say, next October? I think we need three years. I think we need 3 years of at least two. I mean, we don't have the number now. So we got to campaign and push over at least a few people. But I think that they might be rushing it on purpose so that we fall kind of short. Because I don't think if you did fall short, you ain't doing it again in 5 years or 10 years. I think you're waiting. I mean, what, Quebec's just getting riled up again now, 30 years later.
Right. It's going to be interesting. I don't have any opinions about Danielle Smith. You know, I have, I don't follow it that closely, so I don't think I should say anything.
Yeah, I am.
What about Doug Ford calling Mark Carney Santa Claus?
Well, Doug Ford is—he supposedly leads a conservative government, but he certainly doesn't behave in a conservative manner. And there are—I can tell you that there are many conservative voters in Ontario. I live in a very rural community. Leslyn Lewis is our MP, and it's like we're going to vote for Leslyn because she went out and did talk to the truckers too. But I'm getting them mixed up. MPP and MP. We are federally conservative. We are also provincially conservative. It's like, who do you vote for? Because you can't give Doug your vote on the provincial level anymore. Yeah.
How's that new? Wasn't there a new party forming under that? How's that going?
Well, there were two new parties, so that was part of the problem. There was it got a bit confusing for voters. But it's like Maxime Bernier and the People's Party, lots of great ideas, but very, very tough to break through and get ordinary Canadians to even listen to them, and then make an informed decision, And then, of course, the media isn't helping by just the blackout, right?
Well, and then the problem is you start losing elections because of the, there's people that are running around saying that we'd be in a better position right now if there wouldn't have been a PPC in the vote. I mean, I don't know that I don't want to start eliminating political parties, but if all those votes turn blue instead, because that is just the next best option, the election landscape starts to look a lot different. I think they said like the last one, the one in, was it 2021? Or 23, did we do one? Did we do one in 23 too? Or was it just in 2021 was the last one, right? Yeah, it was 2021. I mean, I was seeing some guys posting some stats that if it weren't for the PPC in that one, the Conservatives would have won the election.
Mm-hmm. I've seen those too, yeah.
This is the concern in Alberta now, is that we're going to get this new stupid separatist party that is going to split the vote between the UCP and the separatists and give the government back to the NDP.
Right. Yep, it's a concern.
All of a sudden, the two-party system's looking better in Canada. I mean, because there's kind of two main ideologies, really. It's like one, leave us alone; one, like give more government and more controls. I mean, it's almost like that's where it's got to just end up on those two spectrums, because the other stuff is all just kind of overlapping and minor stuff. I mean, so I want to mention about your book too, before we get a chance, I love the way you did it, where you can scan to the URL and you go to some pictures and stuff. So it's also a repository and kind of a memorial of this time and the convoy with all kinds of pictures and all kinds of stuff. So I think it's a really good idea that you put this together, almost like, a memoram, what's the word I'm thinking of, but I mean, it's really there for history to go and see all the pictures, to read all the stories. And I like how you sort of introduced each story and each trucker, and then they had their own voice in there too. Like it was just really, really well done. So you want to talk a bit about the formatting and how people can go to the Substack, find the chapters, even like find all the pictures, all that kind of stuff.
Sure. So I just have the book here. Thank you, Truckers, Canada's Heroes. And so this is just, I've just opened it at random at the end of chapter 4. And so at the end of each chapter, there is a QR code. And then there's also a very short internet address if you're not into QR codes. But if you take your phone or your tablet and you scan that QR code, then you get to go to a photos page. So the trucker that you were just reading about, you get to see him, you get to see his truck, you get to see the signs on his truck. Incidents that were described in the chapter, there's photographs often. So rather than just having a couple black and white grainy photos in the middle of a book, that's, you know, there are actually most of the chapters end at this QR code, which the QR code is just, that's right. It's just an internet address. And then, so this is chapter one photos. This is Burn from Northern BC, and Andy, and Burn is the truck driver, is the guy on the right. And if we go down there a little bit, you can see his great big truck, and the sign that said Mandate Freedom.
Look at that pic, beautiful sunset pic there.
Yeah, and on the other side of the sign, it said True North, Strong and Free, and he drove that all the way from Northern BC. So you can see, you can see him, and it's just very, I think it really adds something. So, you know, they went out and they were skating on the Rideau Canal. So they took some pictures. And then as I was writing this book, I was writing it on Substack in pieces, in small pieces. And so at the bottom of the page, of the photo page, there's a link to all those previous Substack pieces that you could read as well.
That's a great idea. I mean, it really is a fantastic idea. What's another good chapter? I'll pick another one out here.
How about the, I think it's track 10, maybe. I Own My Own Body. What's that? Number 12, sorry. Chapter 12.
Okay, let me try number 12 here.
So, you know, all that stuff we heard about racism. Well, this guy, OJ Laidley, was a trucker with his Peterbilt, and he was parked on Wellington Street for 3 weeks. And he's a Jamaican immigrant. He's first generation immigrant, and he's married to a first generation immigrant from Serbia, I believe. And these are just two of the loveliest people. And they sat there on Wellington Street for 3 weeks in their truck. And this photo here that you have right here. So OJ is in the middle. So OJ had experienced a mechanical failure, and he needed a $4,000 part. And that first guy on the left, complete stranger, heard about this, ordered that $4,000 part, and then drove to Ottawa to deliver it to OJ.
So wow.
That he could fix his truck and get the heat back in his truck.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, and there's a bunch of stories about the mechanics in your book too. I mean, people that are just there helping all the mechanical things, going back and forth, getting parts for everybody all the time. I mean, there was a whole logistical support network that just sprung up organically, it seems like.
Exactly. And it was amazing. And, you know, the guys in those trucks said, you know, people were bringing us generators. Like sometimes we were getting a generator a day. They were bringing us barbecues still in the box here, you know, so you can cook for yourself. And, you know, the amount of donations of all sorts, food, clothing, it was just amazing. They had too much. They had to give it away to the shelters. And then the shelters said, stop. We can't take anymore. Really, it was amazing. And, you know, one of the things about this book is that it's very Christian friendly, because a lot of the truckers are Christians. I didn't plan that. That's just how it happened. And they, part of the reason they came to Ottawa was because they have a worldview, a framework about, you know, there are certain things that are true, and it doesn't matter what the government says, you stay true to those values. So, you know, even though the churches often failed us in COVID, the Christians showed up in Ottawa, and a bunch of those Christians were behind the wheel. And they went to churches in Ottawa. The churches, and particularly one that I the last chapter of the book is the Bikers Church in Ottawa, which just threw open its doors for 3 weeks. And people came into that church and said, I didn't believe in God before, but I do now, after seeing how all these strangers came together to support the truckers. And I truly believe there are people who will read my book and who will become Christian as a result.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And the other sad part as well was like the people that chose to do interviews with the mainstream. I mean, you have a couple in the book where, you know, they did it, then they listened back to what was said. And of course, it was only like 2 seconds or 3 seconds, a small little clip out of context it was pulled in. So there really was a lot of direct evidence from the people about the mainstream lies and the propaganda. I mean, it's just disgusting.
Yeah. It was. Yes. And, you know, and one trucker said, so, you know, when CBC wants to interview me, I say, so what are you going to make me look like, a racist or a psycho, right? Or whatever, something like that. So, you know, they were aware that they were going to be, and they still gave people the benefit of the doubt. They did the interview, and then exactly what they feared is what happened, right? So the mainstream media. But, you know, this is an interesting point. There were journalists out there on the street doing what their job, which is talk to the truckers, ask them questions, record that. But then when it went back to the studio to be, you know, sliced and diced and edited, the only thing that got broadcast was like 3 seconds of them, you know, looking, saying something that looked unflattering, right?
And how can they handle that? I mean, how can they handle that in their own conscience? Like going and actually experiencing all that and then seeing the final product, like how would they even be able to stay in that job? I mean, it's mind boggling to me.
It is. And you're right. It is disgusting what went on. And yes, how do those journalists continue to work under those conditions? Yeah. Good question.
Do you think we'll ever see something like this again in Canada? I mean, here's the thing. I mean, mostly you have something like this and it ends in some sort of change that we get to just enjoy for a while. But it's in a lot of ways, it sort of fell short, you know, like it really did fall short, I feel like, in a lot of ways. And I don't blame the truckers for that, but I think we expected a little more than we got.
I mean, indirectly, all the mandates came off right after this. I mean, it really was the end of the mandates.
Well, the mandates haven't come off. You still can't get an organ in most of Canada if you're vaccinated. There's still a ton of problems along the way, you know? And it was like if at best they gave us just enough to shut the fuck up, you know, just at best. But I think that we were hoping for more. I mean, I was expecting more. What's your sort of take on that, dude? Because it just seemed like, you know, you have these sort of moments in a country and they kind of go into that next step. They take a step up the ladder, go up a rung on the ladder. And I feel like, you know, we didn't really quite get to do that. And I mean, in a lot of ways, a lot of these guys are still fucked. Some of these guys are still in jail. Some of them lost their trucks. You know, it's not a fairy tale ending that we sort of, not saying that you're saying it is, but that sort of, you know, we like to think it is, you know, like, I mean, I was just reading a thing the other day of all the stuff that I think the Butler fellow, is it Butler that he's going through, the guy with the big red truck.
Oh, Chris Barber. Yes. Barber. So, right. So, first of all, I agree with you. It wasn't a fairy tale ending. And if we expected some big revolutionary change, no, that did not happen. Do I think it's going to happen again? It may, but not this way. This was unique, I think. There were unique circumstances. Canadians are very, very slow to protest, you know, and after 2 years of COVID stuff, they got to the point where they actually protested, but Canadians don't. Protests are usually just, you know, the same small group of people who go to all the lefty protests. You know, Canadians don't do that very much. But I feel quite strongly that the truckers changed the trajectory. Absolutely. The trajectory was getting worse and worse. They were talking about turning the screw on the unvaxxed even more. They were not moderating their tone at all before the truckers got in their trucks and drove. And you're absolutely right. It was a Western Canada thing that inspired everyone else in the country to join in. I think they started talking early on about, well, could we get people from elsewhere? But it was only after we saw that convoy coming across. And again, it wasn't the mainstream media showing us that was just ordinary people with their drones doing that video and then putting it out on social media, that we had any sense of just how magnificent that convoy coming across the West was. But it did change the trajectory because one of the things that's very interesting, a very interesting takeaway from this, is that afterwards there was the inquiry into the Emergencies Act. And the police were very clear that they did not have enough cops in this country to deal with the protest at the Windsor Bridge and the protest in Ottawa. They had to choose. So they sent the cops to the to Windsor first. They got that dismantled, and then they sent the cops to Ottawa. So it actually suggests that that there's a limited number of police, and when Canadians all across the country start doing things because they're upset. And there were demonstrations at many of the provincial capitals. There were demonstrations at a number of border crossings. When Canadians actually stand up, it doesn't actually take that many Canadians to give the government a real serious problem. And, I think it's ridiculous that the leaders like Trudeau didn't come out and just talk to the truckers. And, they have... lobbyists, hundreds of lobbyists every month get meetings with the federal government, someone in the federal government, but no one would have a single meeting with the truckers. That is absurd. That is absurd. That's not how you run a country. And had they come out and just had a conversation, there's a very good chance those truckers would have all gone home within a week. And, the amount of money that was spent bringing in thousands of police officers from across the country, paying them overtime, putting them in hotels, paying for their food, probably giving them a per diem, it was an outrageous amount of money. Just if you're just talking about money that the government chose to spend rather than simply having a conversation with people. Just unbelievable.
And it's... The other couple crazy things are that make me think of this is it was all based on all the mandates were bullshit too. I mean, we all knew back then that the jabs were not what they said they were. And, and it's so it makes it, doubly frustrating because if it was a real threat or there was a real thing and you weren't really sure what was happening, but it was so obvious. And even now, it's still crazy that they haven't, Darren was saying, there's still these weird mandates and they're still pushing it on pregnant women. And you're like, how is this still even happening after all that? And what was the other thing I was going to say about, now I've lost my train of thought there.
Way to go.
Yeah. It was, something about the convoy itself, but, I have to, Darren, you got to bail me out on this one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was great. I seen it. If it happened now, I'd go for sure.
I just don't think it'll happen again. I mean,
I don't think so either. Like I say, I don't think it really seems like the only people that are still riled up are in Alberta and Saskatchewan at this point. And I mean, I always get shit for not, I mean, that line extends like Kamloops. All right. For the BC.
Well, but let me tell you, I am going around right now, my full-time job, after spending 3 years researching, writing this book, my full-time job this year is trying to let people know about this book, trying to sell them this book. So I am going around to a lot of community groups, and I can tell you that in the last 2 months, I have been to 5 different community groups, all within an hour of Ottawa. and they have been incredibly receptive. So there are still pockets of Canadians out here in Ontario, even within an hour of the nation's capital. And, you know, one of the things is that because people who lived near Ottawa could go in to the convoy, and some of them went like every second day, you know, and brought people food and just checked it up on some of their, you know, the truckers they'd befriended. So in fact, you know, there's Parliament Hill, and then there's this big donut all around Parliament, which is Ottawa, which is really farmland, lots and lots of farmers. And I can tell you, those folks are still very, very much pro-convoy people. And they, you know, and they are voting conservative. It's just, you know, we're it's just like you in Alberta. You're kind of outnumbered by those guys in Calgary and Edmonton. You know, there's the real rural urban split and how people vote. We've got that going on here in Ontario for sure as well. So, but please, you know, don't be too discouraged about your fellow Canadians. But we, you know, obviously we have some work to do.
I have no problem with any. I mean, I'm from Ontario. I have no problem with my fellow Canadians. I just don't think that I have no problem with, you know, Europeans or British people either. But I'm not interested in like sharing politics with them. I think that's like, I mean, before I even, because I'll be honest, I'm an anarchist at the end of the day. I'd rather have no state. I don't think that there's any sort of evidence of any government in history that hasn't, you know, routed towards tyranny eventually. I think that's sort of that's what the math adds up to. No matter how long we can dodge it or evade it, I can look at the last 100 years of Canada and just see like a clear march of the loss of freedoms. Doesn't matter what party's in charge. It's like at the best, the Conservatives will hold the line on some things for a few years before they just come back in and start taking it more. So I mean, part of the fault for losing of the election comes down to that we don't have a real Conservative Party at the end of the day. You know what? The Liberals just had to change a couple of little things, and you know, the Pierre's whole platform was sort of pulled out from underneath them, because I think that the Conservatives here are too gutless to be real Conservatives. I think that there's a more of an appetite for actual Conservative values in Canada. I think the PPC goes a little far, and they're a little scattered, and they're a bit of a fucking mess. And then when you try actually talking to some of them, they're just kind of like, you know, idiots. But I think that there's a line in between, you know, there's a healthy line. And I don't want to say that they're idiots. I just think that they haven't fully thought through some of the implications of some of the things that they say. But I think that the real Conservative Canada is somewhere in between there, you know, because I know that I'm going to have to compromise with the Conservatives that don't want to be anarchists at some point. That's why I have to go out and vote for Conservative Canadians at the end of the day, is mostly just because it's like, well, hey, man, these guys are going to take the ball this far away from where I want it to be, and these guys are only going to take it this far from where I want to be. But for 150 years in Canada, there hasn't been a single politician that was looking to bring the ball back, not even a couple of yards. So I think for years, I've been sort of advocating that decentralization, it needs to be decentralized. And it was funny because a lot of people would agree with me on that. And then when we see this first step towards what decentralization actually looks like, everybody freaks the fuck out. But I don't think, I mean, I'm not, I don't think Canada's working. I think it needs to be split up into at least 4 or 5 different countries, whether they have some sort of union between them. You know, they can figure that out later. I think the USA needs the sort of same treatment. I think that the Europeans getting into this union is causing more trouble there than there needs to be. So for me, it doesn't, if Quebec wants to separate, if Nova Scotia, I don't care who wants to separate. I am fucking all in. Like, go for it. Get out of here. Because, you know, what the one thing that we have learned for sure since the trucker convoy and sort of moving forward, we operated for 6-7 months without a parliament in this country. And you know, clearly it doesn't matter. They found money to spend. They found this to do. It's like, if the last year or two has taught us anything, it's that if you've got a majority government in Canada, or maybe not even a majority, if you have just like a deal with some other asshole, for all intents and purposes, you've got dictatorial powers in this country. You can sort of just But they didn't even have to vote on fucking taking away my guns. They just wrote some shit on a piece of paper, and my pieces of my personal property are now banned in this country. So I think, and now, you know, some people love Trump, some people hate him. I don't mind Trump. You know, I kind of go either way. He warp speeded us. I have a problem with that. I haven't quite fully forgiven him on. But you, whether you love him or hate him, he gets into office day one and signs hundreds of executive orders. I mean, the countries were not, I would argue that the countries, I mean, ours was kind of weird because it was just sort of be a weird sort of shove off from the king to just get rid of some responsibility, but still keep power. But even the U.S. system especially was never designed to have the president wield such extraordinary power. The one thing that we've been going towards for 20 years is this extreme centralization of power, where it's not just Ottawa that's running the West. It's a couple of fucking dudes, a couple of dozen people. And it's, and, you know, we don't have a parliamentary system that allows for dissent within the party even. So it's like, you know, Trudeau could just do whatever he wants. Do whatever you want. Don't matter. We'll still vote for it. We'll still just keep voting for you. So I think that's the real problem, is we're getting real close to dictators in both these countries, or whatever that sort of looks like. And the only way to, I think, stop that is to break it apart, is to get rid of all those ties. I think that, I don't know, you know, I don't know if there's a question there or not. It's more of just a rant, but it's like my whole lifetime, I've just watched the power be more and more centralized within the thing. So it's like, I don't know. Do I have a representative system? No one asks me what the fuck I want. Even my local politician doesn't care what I want. You know, that it's all party, 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 party. That's not democracy.
Yes. And, you know, and a great deal of what you've said, I totally get it. I totally get it. I see it. That's what I see, too, is more and more centralized power. You know, and you see it even at the municipal level, where they take a bunch of small towns and they put them all in under one wing. And then you really do lose the ability to determine what's happening in your town, because now you're voting with the town next door is voting against you in a different way because they want something different. It's a big concern. It's a big concern. And, you know, I do remember the Quebec referendum, because my husband got a job in Quebec like the month after the referendum was held. And we moved to Quebec for 18 months, and there was still all kinds of anti-English graffiti around. English, go home. You know, it was a really tense time, and there was a lot of negativity. And I think the referendum in Alberta will be very different. But it's also worth noting that, yes, the rest of Canada said to Quebec, we want you, we love you, please stay. And I don't think that's what
everyone's telling us
hearing in Alberta.
And that's definitely terrible. Not what we're hearing. And I was kind of asking some people about that. We did a show on that, a segment on that, where it's like, was it like this for Quebec? Was it like, you know, fuck you? Because that's the sentiment we're getting. It's just like, yeah, good luck without. I mean, and it's just so ignorant. Most of it is so like intellectually ignorant that it's like, oh my God, no wonder this is, we're in this mess.
That's right.
No wonder.
Please accept my apology as a non-Albertan for that, because that's just awful. That is awful. And it's a sign.
Well, the ironic thing is that everyone's going to freak out. And even when we do pass a referendum, eventually they're all going to vote to not let us leave the country. So.
Yes. Well, you will make good decisions, and history is not written. And I think it's going to be a very, very interesting time, and also hopefully a thought-provoking time for all Canadians, not just for Albertans, about what do we want our future to look like, and our children's future, right? So I think you're asking the right questions. You're thinking about things in a very productive and constructive way, and good luck to you.
Thanks. Is there anything we missed out of your book that you want to mention at all? Or
I think it's good. So just to mention that there have been a number of convoy books And they're good books and they're important parts of the historical record, but they're usually written by one person and it's their perspective of what happened in the convoy. And this is the first book that actually talks about just the ordinary truckers, where I went out and I interviewed ordinary people. Why did you get behind your truck? What was it like? What happened? What was your experience? Were you one of those people who had your bank accounts frozen or were tear gassed or all of that? And there are some of those guys are in this book. So this is a book about the ordinary person's experience of the convoy. And I think that is very valuable. And I'm very, very pleased and kind of proud to have written it. And I think it's going to help future generations understand what really actually went on there.
Oh, totally. I think it's fantastic that you did it. And I recommend it. How can people find it?
So
where do they go?
The easiest way is Amazon. Amazon.ca, Amazon.com. The wonderful thing is I can put it up in one place on Amazon and my friends in the UK can buy it. My friends in Australia can buy it rather than having to get a separate publishing agreement with every country. So Amazon has trade-offs, pluses and minuses, but for a writer like me, it's a great thing. So Amazon is the best place. And I'm also going to be traveling around the country. I don't have dates for going out west yet, but I would certainly like to make it there before the end of the year. So maybe we'll get to meet in person.
What about the Substack? What's your Substack too?
So Substack is just thankyoutruckers@substack.com. Yeah. And because I'm doing some other stuff, I'm not writing there quite as often, but there's a great archive there of 3 years of wonderful stories, not all of which made it into the book.
Excellent. Donna, this has been great. If you do come out west, let us know and we'll come out and support you. And we'll encourage everyone to get the book and come back. If you do another one, let us know and we'll do this again.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Donna. Later.
Thanks. Yeah. And that was our chat with Donna Laframboise. You do it. Laframboise. You're supposed to, can you speak French? No.
I used to.
We
moved out of Quebec before the English graffiti, or before the anti-English graffiti.
There you go.
That's 78. We moved out of Quebec in 78, I guess. So I think my parents saw it coming.
There you have it. Well, big thanks to Donna for coming on the show. Big thanks to you guys for listening. Also, big thanks to David and Timmy in the chats who sent us some super chats. If you're watching on YouTube, you can do that now. Of course, like, subscribe, comment, share, all that good stuff. Check us out on a-list.ca if you're into podcasts, if you prefer that route. You can support us over there as well. Of course, while you're on the internet, check out guyamerica.ca for all the other stuff we're up to and contact@thecabin.com for trips and events, adultbrain.ca for audiobooks. Other than that, we love you guys. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never political anyhow. Since when did you start trusting in the government? Since when was it okay to ridicule and shame your neighbor? Your opinions have become as fickle as artificial flavors. What matters most to you? What the TV host told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north, oh true? Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never religious anyhow. Since when did you kiss the ring on the hand of the Pope? Since when do we need pharmaceuticals to cope? Your soul has become, ever-loving soul has become, as brittle as communion wafers. What matters most to you? What the Holy Ghost told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north, oh true? I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. Bureaucrats think I'm non-essential anyhow. Since when has our culture become so lowbrow? It's all touchscreens, and nobody has any know-how. Your idea of fun, Your idea of fun is taking 1,001 photos of your duck face. Matters most to you. What the celebrities most told you was cool, or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your 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 sacred cow.